Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad science. On Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, coming to you live from the city of Detroit, Motown. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. Tonight is a very special program. And as always, when I have a special program to present, the devil gets twisted up in the details. He always tries to present himself as an opposing force to truth being exposed. He always presents himself as contrary to the forward motion of spiritual, social upheavals, which lead towards true righteousness in the lives of men and women. To that end, tonight's program can be described as this. We are faced today with a serious choice. The coronavirus has ravaged the world and shows no immediate signs of retreating. We are faced with malicious food shortages and drought, genetically modified organisms replaced with no nutrition, a replacement with no nutritional value, and we wonder why we starve. Demonic forces in the form of psychological dis-ease, not disease, but dis-ease. My beloved right now is facing a dis-ease due to these demonic forces, which because of the psychological pressure of the vicissitudes of life, choices must be made. However, dis-ease makes choices hard to do without pain and suffering. So this dis-ease is exploding amongst the populations around the world. Struggle and strife. These things have been prophesied for millennia in all the books of scripture, the Quran, the Bible, the Zendavesta, and other theological writings that have existed for thousands of years. Yet, is there scientific proof of this, and how can we recognize it in a politically charged atmosphere, in a politically charged world of social ravage and upheaval? So we begin this by looking at social engineering, and let us find the truth in this engineering. So before we jump right in head first, and we begin to swim, let us open our program with a special word from Mr. Daniel Beatty. And I say a special word from Daniel Beatty because we must become to understand, as young adults moving forward with our lives, who we are, what we are, and why we are. And I think Mr. Beatty summed it up with his spoken word poetry. So, Mr. Beatty, where are you? Let us find you, and let us bring you forward once again on this edition of Not So Mad Science. Once again, and as always, you know, they don't want to let us bring the program forward. So it appears that I may have to go out and restart tonight's show. So if the call should drop, don't let that throw you. I want you to give me 2 minutes and you call right back on in. Assalamu alaikum. And we're back. And we're live. And we're going to do it once again. So, welcome to this edition of Not So Mad Science. And I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. The devil might be in the details, but I got a nice stick with a nail in it and an anvil in the other hand to crush his skull into dust. So, as we were saying, we're going to look at this thing called social engineering. But before we get there, I wanted to hear from Mr. Daniel Beatty. I know you've heard it before. However, it is such a wonderful reminder, a wonderful, wonderful reminder, particularly to the young in you, not the youth, but the youngness in you, because youthfulness is a state of mind. It is not a physical condition. So, Mr. Beatty, where might you be that we can use your tone to set the tone for tonight's program?
As a boy, I shared a game with my father. Played it every morning till I was 3. He would knock on my door, and I'd pretend to be asleep till he got right next to the bed. Then I would get up and jump into his arms. Good morning, Papa. And my papa, he would tell me that he loved me. We shared a game, knock, knock, until that day when the knock never came. And my mama takes me on a ride past cornfields on this never-ending highway till we reach a place of high, rusty gates. A confused little boy, I enter the building carried in my mama's arms. Knock, knock. We reach a room of windows and brown faces. Behind one of the windows sits my father. I jump out of my mama's arms and run joyously towards my papa's, only to be confronted by this window. I knock, knock, trying to break through the glass, trying to get to my father. I knock, knock as my mama pulls me away before my papa even says a word. And for years he has never said a word. And so 25 years later I write these words for the little boy in me who still awaits his papa's knock. Papa, come home because I miss you. Miss you waking me up in the morning and telling me you love me. Papa, come home, because there's things I don't know, and I thought maybe you could teach me how to shave, how to dribble a ball, how to talk to a lady, how to walk like a man. Papa, come home, because I decided a while back I want to be just like you, but I'm forgetting who you are. And 25 years later, a little boy cries, and so I write these words and try to heal and try to father myself, and I dream up a father who says the words my father did not, dear son. I'm sorry I never came home. For every lesson I fail to teach, hear these words. Shave in one direction with strong, deliberate strokes to avoid irritation. Dribble the page with the brilliance of your ballpoint pen. Walk like a god, and your goddess will come to you. No longer will I be there to knock on your door, so you must learn to knock for yourself. Knock, knock down doors of racism and poverty that I could not. Knock, knock on doors of opportunity for the lost brilliance of the black men who crowd these cells. Knock, knock with diligence for the sake of your children. Knock, knock for me, for as long as you are free, these prison gates cannot contain my spirit. The best of me still lives in you. Knock, knock with the knowledge that you are my son, but you are not my choices. Yes, we are our father's sons and daughters, but we are not their choices. For despite their absences, we are still here, still alive, still breathing, with the power to change this world. One little boy and girl at a time. Knock, knock. Who's there? We are.
The question you may begin to ask is, Brother Harold, what has that got to do with social engineering? It has all to do with social engineering. We must each individually look forward within our own individual independence, the independence of thought, the independence of mind, and the independence of will. The devil is always around us. He is in and part of everything. But when we make a choice, we decide whether or not his impact on what we do turns it negative or positive. Our parents cannot do that for us. We must do that for ourselves. Why? because when you knock on the door of opportunity, you do the work. And if you do your work well, God blesses you with success. When you knock on the door of opportunity and you turn that opportunity to the negative, then you let the devil into your existence, then that knock becomes your opening of the door to hell. You have now been socially engineered. But before we get into the depths of social engineering, I do want to share with you a piece of COVID-19 news, the coronavirus, and a piece of sadness that there is a young 13-year-old girl missing in the city of Detroit. She was last seen today's Tuesday. She was last seen sometime Sunday, walking out her door, black T-shirt on with black pants with a white stripe on it. It is feared that she may have done something to harm herself. Why would a young 13-year-old girl wish to harm herself? What could be the cause of her despair? What could be at the root of her strife? Is she a victim of this environment of social engineering that we live in now? With respect to the coronavirus, in the news today, they want to tell us that the virus has touched everywhere on the planet. Well, I want to share with you the impact of the COVID virus. You need not have to catch the COVID virus to be a victim of the COVID virus. To that end, I'll say this. The COVID-19 virus has infected almost every country on the planet, apart from 10. So what do these 10 countries know that we don't know? And why would they not be infected? I'll give you an example. On the island of Koroa sits off the coast of New Zealand, roughly 300-400 miles off the coast of New Zealand. It is in that Polynesian island chain. The Palu Hotel, which opened in 1982, before mass tourism began, but since then, this very tiny island nation, which is surrounded by blue sky, the sky blue wonderfulness of the Pacific Ocean, it has enjoyed something of an economic boom these past few years. In 2019 alone, 90,000 tourists came through the island and through the hotel of Palu, five times the total tourism population in 2017, according to the International Monetary Fund figures. Tourism made up almost 50% of the economy of the tiny island nation. But that was before the COVID-19 hit. Since COVID-19, country of Koroa on the island of Palu did the responsible thing. Their borders have been closed. In effect, they've been closed since late March. It is one of only 10 countries in the world with no confirmed cases, counting only countries that are full UN members, and excluding North Korea and Turkmenistan, as well as Cuba. Yet, without infecting a single person on the island, the virus has ravaged that country. Palu Hotel has been closed since March, and it's not alone. Not one restaurant is open. They all sit empty. Not one souvenir shop is open. They all sit shuttered closed. And the only hotel guests that are returning are residents who are under quarantine that was out of the country. So what are these other 10 countries? You got the island of Palau. You have the islands of Micronesia. You have the Marshall Islands. You have the island of Nauru. You have the island of Kiribati. You have the Solomon Islands. You have Tuvalu. You have Samoa. The island of Vanuatu. And you have Tonga. These countries have no confirmed cases of the coronavirus. Yet, these countries are victims of the coronavirus because these countries depend upon tourist traffic for almost half their functioning economy. A tourist trade that is effectively shut down. No cruise ships are going to these islands. No airport is open that is functioning as a tourist trafficking institution. The ocean is the natural barrier against infection. So, to this day, it is small countries that are unaffected by the COVID-19 virus. But empty hotels cannot be maintained. Empty hotels cannot be renovated for other tourists to come and to enjoy the super purity of the blue skies, the super purity of the ocean off their coast. You can't blame the governments. The governments did the responsible thing, looking out for the health, safety, and welfare of its citizens by closing its borders to all trafficking other than known registered citizens and residents. So I think they did the right thing. The economy can always bolster. Close your hotel. Shut that thing down for the next couple of years. Why? Because the world must endure its sanction. And this is a sanction not created in a man-made laboratory. It is a sanction from God to force you to look within and to examine yourself. Again, this is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. But because we spoke of the COVID-19 virus, does not mean that this is not a part of a structure of social engineering. What is the message from God when you can't go no place, where you can't do anything, and the only thing you have to look at is yourself? What is God asking you to do? So let us jump right on in and take a look at this concept called social engineering. We are political environment and the society of this time. Social engineering broadly refers to the psychological manipulation of human behavior that makes people act in certain ways. It's a technique that exploits our cognitive biases and our basic instincts for the purpose of power and control. But the power of who and the control by whom? Social engineering is sometimes referred to as human hacking, as in computer hacking. While social engineering, this was historically practiced face-to-face, over the phone, through printed writing. Social engineering can and does now occur on a societal scale via television, through social media, radio. And now, social media via other internet platforms. The platform designers may not have intended user data to be leveraged for the exploitation and political manipulation. But recent revelations regarding the Cambridge Analytica use of Facebook data are only one indication of this global threat of social engineering. Employee behavior, for example, has a serious impact on organizational cybersecurity, which means by extension that social engineering does as well. Most places, particularly if you work for the federal government, they monitor every keystroke. They monitor every spoken word. They monitor all data coming and going. Why? To know how effectively to direct, redirect, stop, or completely cut off avenues of truthful communication. Governments use social engineering to leverage cultural concepts that can help various segments of society. These principles fall under the umbrella of an information security culture, defined as the totality of patterns of behavior that contribute to the protection of said government or society. Maybe. Social engineering is part of a security culture that depends on the lack of awareness of the people and persons infected and affected by the manipulation of said government or organization. Understanding that hackers try to actively manipulate our behavior is essential to the daily risk management and development of cyber instincts. But how do we correct this when it is a social engineering directed toward the body population of a country and the government and people who are subject to that government in said country? Therefore, social engineering can be looked upon as being cognitive exploitation. Social engineering is based on specific techniques and attributes of the human's ability to make decisions, known as cognitive bias. These biases, sometimes called bugs in human hardware, are byproducts of the brain taking shortcuts to quickly process information. There are advantages and an evolutionary sense of behavior to this process. But they also leave us open to exploitation through social engineering. There is a more common word that can be used to describe what social engineering is. It's called marketing, mass advertising. Products that appeal to the lower basic instinct in your mind and done in such a repetitious manner, you can't understand why, with a lot of women, you go out to buy bikini brief underwear when you got a butt that is ta-da. Your behind will swallow up that bikini as if you got nothing on. So they make the bikini underwear smaller and smaller and smaller, that regardless of the size of your posterior, the underwear disappears. Yet you can't stop yourself from buying it, whether it looks good on you or not, whether it is representative of the higher instincts of your mind to wear underwear that separates your behind from your exterior clothing. Why wear something that is barely there when it's just as easy to do what? Wear nothing at all, which is what they want you to do in the first place. Social engineering in the form of mass marketing and advertising. Let's take another look. Each time we see a car, we don't have to remember the specific color or make. Our brains look at the object, sees its four wheels, movement, and general shape, and says, car. This is a biased social engineer that salesmen can exploit in the cyber domain of your brain. For instance, we can receive many emails from Apple or Amazon, but we're not necessarily going to look too closely at a false one with the same logo. Why? Our brain will just say Amazon mail and click on a link and type in your credit card number, and you purchase something that you absolutely positively do not need. Social engineering. But can we go further? Yes, we can. Let's take a looky here. At the Republican National Convention, our current president, unfortunately or not, Dr. Donald Trump, and I say doctor because he knows more than the doctors who advise him about the coronavirus. Mr. Trump says that the Republican convention, that the coming election is rigged. Dr. Trump has warned his fellow Republicans in his opening statement at the Republican National Convention. He says that their opponents plan to steal the November election. They're using COVID, he says, and I quote, they're using COVID to defraud the American people, Mr. Trump told the delegates on the first day of the party's convention in North Carolina. He repeated an untrue claim that mail-in ballots could lead to massive voter fraud. So an unprecedented number of U.S. citizens, Americans, are expected to vote by mail as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. And voting officials have dismissed the claim that mail-in voting leads to fraud as a false conspiracy theory. However, Mr. Trump himself uses the voter mail-in system regularly himself. Yet, what did he do? Mr. Trump is exercising social engineering. How many of you listeners know what a straw man argument is? So let's ask the question. What is a straw man argument? Well, the answer to that question is quite simple. A straw man is a form of argument and an informal fallacy. And a fallacy is a lie. An informal lie of having the impression of refuting an argument that is true. However, under a discussionary environment, the straw man argument, if not addressed, becomes the truth knowing that that argument is founded in a lie. So one who engages in this fallacy is said to be attacking a straw man, because to answer it nullifies you. To not answer it nullifies you again. Hence, Mr. Trump effectively using the straw man argument to socially engineer the minds of the American people to accept an idea of a stolen election has been placed on the minds of the American people. Hence, if I lose, the election was stolen. What is Mr. Trump expecting? He's expecting to lose. But he set the argument for a legal battle that the Supreme Court could then decide who wins the election, a Supreme Court balanced in his favor because he appointed all of the sitting, primarily all of the sitting Republican jurists that sit on the Supreme Court. This is not so mad science. On the Black Hole Radio Network with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad. I kid you not. So, but is there a condition which identifies social engineering far greater than the theft of a mere election of presidency? Can a case be made for social engineering in that regard? For those of you who do not know, I want to share with you the Willie Lynch letter, The Making of a Slave, the second greatest exercise of social engineering in known history. This speech was said to have been delivered by Willie Lynch on the banks of the James River in the colony of Virginia in 1712. Mr. Lynch was a British slave owner in the West Indies. He was invited to the colony of Virginia in 1712 to teach his methodology to slave owners there. Mr. Lynch begins his letter with, "Greetings, gentlemen. I greet you here on the bank of the James River in the year of our Lord, 1712. Note the opening delivery of Mr. Lynch's letter. Because not only is he presenting an argument of social engineering to structure a slave that is self-propagating, without the active participation of the master, he's also in creating the mind of a social structure within the current slave masters who are subservient to him, because the America is the little brother of England. Gentlemen, I greet you here on the banks of the James River in the year of our Lord, 1712. First of all, I thank you, the gentlemen of the colony of Virginia, note his language, for bringing me here. I am here to help you solve some of your problems with slaves. Your invitation reached me on my modest plantation in the West Indies." Mr. Willie Lynch wasn't just a modest slave owner. He was one of the largest and most effective slave owners in the West Indies, where I have experimented with some of the newest and still the oldest methods for control of slaves, the forgotten technology of their father, Yakub. Ancient Rome would envy us if my program is implemented. As our boat sailed south on the James River, named for our illustrious king. Now, he's saying our illustrious king, the James River, meaning the Americas during the period of slavery was not separated from England. She was still subject to them, as we were led to believe that they were separated by 1812. No, our illustrious king, independence was supposed to be in 1776, but everything is named in answer to the king and or queen of England. Yet, their boat sailed south on the James River, named for our illustrious king, whose version of the Bible we cherish. Whose version? The King James Version. The version written to appeal to and identify and make obsolete anyone who used his authorized version. There's a lot in Mr. Lynch's letter. If you use your ear to hear the social engineering and the construct of a society that follows. I saw enough to know your problem is not unique. While Rome used cords of wood as crosses for standing human bodies along its highways in great numbers, you are here using the tree and the rope on occasions. I caught the whiff of a dead slave hanging from a tree a couple miles back. You are not only losing valuable stock by hanging, you are having uprisings. Slaves are running away. Your crops are sometimes left in the field too long for maximum profit. You suffer occasional fires. Your animals are killed. Gentlemen, you know what your problems are? I do not need to elaborate. I am not here to enumerate your problems. I am here to introduce you to a method of social engineering. A method of solving them. In my bag here, I have a foolproof method for controlling your black slaves. For those of you and some of you that are friends of mine, close ones, dear ones, and loved ones, you know of my writing of a particular item called How Do You Turn a God into a Slave? And in Mr. Lynch's letter, you will see portions of how this is done. I guarantee every one of you that if installed correctly, it will control the slaves for at least 300 years. My method is simple. Any member of your family or your overseer can use it. Now, I want you to take note, Mr. Lynch wrote his letter to the slave masters who sat along with him along the banks of the James River in Virginia in 1712. I want you to add 300 to 1712 and tell me what year that is. You do that, I'll continue. I have outlined a number of differences among the slaves. And I take these differences and make them bigger. I use fear, distrust, and envy for control purposes. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies, and it will work throughout the South. This simple list of differences, and think about them. On top of my list is age. But it's there only because it starts with an A. The second is color or shade. There is intelligence, size, sex, size of plantation, status on plantation, attitudes of owners, whether the slaves live in the valley or on a hill, fine hair, coarse hair, or is tall or short. Now that you have a list of differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But before that, I shall assure you that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy is stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration. The black slaves, after receiving this indoctrination, shall carry on and will become self-refueling. This self-refueling action, brothers and sisters, is the construct of social engineering. After receiving this indoctrination, shall carry on and be self-refueling and self-regenerating. For hundreds of years, maybe thousands. Don't forget, you must pitch the old black slave versus the young black male, and the young black male against the old black male. You must use the dark-skinned slave versus the light-skinned slave, and the light-skinned slave versus the dark-skinned slave. You must use the female versus the male, and the male versus the female. You must also have white servants and overseers who distrust all blacks. But it is necessary that your slaves trust and depend on us. They must love, respect, and trust only us. Gentlemen, these kits are your keys to control. Use them. Have your wives and children use them. Never miss an opportunity. If used intensely for 1 year, the slaves themselves will remain perpetually distrustful, you gentlemen. Let's make a slave. It was the interest and the business of slaveholders to study human nature, social engineering, and the slave nature in particular, with a view to practical results. I and many of them attained astonishing proficiency in this direction. They had to deal not with earth, wood, and stone, but with men, and by every regard, they had for their own safety I just had a thought that disturbed me greatly. But with men, and by every regard, they had for their own safety and prosperity, they needed to know the material on which they were to work, conscious of the injustice and wrong they were every hour perpetuating, and knowing what they themselves would do. Were they victims of such wrongs? Didn't they looking for the first signs of dreaded retribution? They watched, therefore, with skilled and practiced eyes, and learned to read with great accuracy the state of mind and heart of the slave that they were socially engineering through this sable face. Unusual sobriety, apparent abstractions, sullenness, and indifference indeed. Any moves out of the common was afforded ground for suspicion and inquiry. Frederick Douglass, Let's Make a Slave, study in the scientific process of man breaking. I'm going to say that again. Is a study of the scientific process of man breaking and slave making. How do you turn a God who is man into a slave? It describes the rationale and results of the Anglo-Saxons' ideas and methods of ensuring the master-slave relationship. Let's Make a Slave. The original and development of a social being called the Negro. Let us make a slave. What do we need? First of all, we need a black nigger man, a pregnant nigger woman, and her baby nigger boy. Second, we will use the same basic principle that we use in breaking a horse, combined with some more sustaining factors. I want to add a footnote in here. For the men that are listening, and for the black woman that is listening. For the man, think of your grandmother, your mother, your wife, your daughter, and your aunt, and your sister. These six women depend upon that nigger man, that black man, and lash him to the pole. Do not kill him. Do not break a bone upon him. Tie him about the ankles to the post. Tie him about the knees to the post. Tie him about the waist, the hips, the chest, the torso, the shoulders, the neck, the chin, and his forehead to the post. Ensure that his arms are lashed behind him and tied to the post. Ensure that there's no part of him that can be moved. Pin his eyes open such that he cannot close them. Take that nigger woman, that black woman, your grandmother, your mother, your wife, your sister, your daughter, your aunt, and do these other things to her that no human being has ever experienced in life. Assault her in ways that she know not from where she can find escape. Make her call out to that man, that black man, soon to become the nigger man. Make her call out to him to save her. Make her cry out in such pain and agony that she can no longer take and suffer from what is being done to her. Make sure that man's mouth is gagged so that he cannot speak words of comfort or strength to her. All there is left for him to do is shed the tears down his face that he cannot control because his eyes are pinned open with toothpicks. All she can see on that nigger man is fear, terror, horror, and the tears of not being able to protect the queen black woman that he once knew, who had been used in such malignant and malicious ways, and he can do nothing to save her. And in her cries of anguish, my Lord, my Lord, why hast thou forsaken me? Help me, my Lord. And her help does not come. All she can see are the tears on your face. Those tears begin to turn to brine and salt. And her tears and her cries now fade and they become capitulation. She surrenders to her abuser. She caters and comes forward and gives herself to the power of her abuser because her God-man can do nothing for her. And the child that comes forth from the abuse not only is festered and grown in the hatred that that mother now has for the God-man who could not save her, it comes forward with a weakness and an affinity to give himself and to surrender himself to his slave master. How do you turn a God into a slave? Because that woman now hates that man who could not save her. And in her hatred of him, he is broken and rendered to nothingness because the love that gave him the fire to be God was the love that came from her to him. It no longer there. It has been repressed, suppressed, submerged, and damn near completely destroyed. Gentlemen, I give you a plan here along the banks of the James River, named after our illustrious and loving king, to whom this book, the Bible, is named after and named for. What do we do to break horses? Is we break them one from in one form of life to another. That is, we reduce them from their natural state in nature. Whereas nature provides them with the natural capacity to take care of their offspring, we break that natural string of independence from them and thereby create a dependency status, so that we may be able to get from them useful production for our business and pleasure. And their condition of self-hate is now self-propagating. So what are the cardinal principles for making a Negro, socially engineering the lowest form of life to exist on two legs that used to be called a man, for fear that our future generations may not understand the principle of breaking both of the beasts together, the nigger and the horse. We understand that short-range planning economics results in periodic economic chaos, so that to avoid turmoil in the economy, it requires us to have breadth and depth in long-range comprehensive planning, articulating both skilled, sharp perceptions. We lay down the following principles for long-range comprehensive planning. Both horse and nigger are no good to the economy in the wild or natural state. Both must be broken and tied together for orderly production. The orderly future, special and particular attention must be paid to the female and the youngest offspring. I'm going to say that again. For orderly future, special and particular attention must be paid to the female and the youngest offspring. Both must be crossbred to produce a variety and division of labor. Both must be taught to respond to a peculiar new language. Psychological and physical instruction of containment must be created for both. We hold the six cardinal principles as truth to be self-evident. Based upon the following discourse, the concerning the economics of breaking and tying the horse and the nigger together, all-inclusive principle laid down above. Take note, neither principle alone will suffice for good economics. All principles must be employed for orderly good of the nation. Accordingly, both a wild horse and a wild or natural nigger is dangerous even if captured, for they will have the tendency to seek their customary freedom, and in doing so might kill you in your sleep. Praise God for Nat Turner. Praise God for Denmark Vesey. These niggers could not be broken. They sleep while you are awake, and are awake while you are asleep. They are dangerous near the family house, and it requires too much labor to watch them away from the house. Above all, you cannot get them to work in this natural state. Hence, both the horse and the nigger must be broken. There was also an additional part to the torment of the black man tied to the board as the black woman watched. They folded him over the sawhorse, and a large white male, or would have another broken nigger, impale him in his rectum in front of that woman and make him bleed. To destroy the manhood in that man, such that that woman would not respect him as he yelled out in pain. It's called buck breaking. It wasn't a horse, but the buck was the Negro who resisted being broken, but had to be destroyed in the eyes of that black woman. Hence, both the horse and the nigger must be broken. That is, breaking them from one form of mental life to another. Keep the body, take the mind. In other words, break the will to resist Satan's law. Now, the breaking process is the same, the horse and the nigger, only slightly varying in degrees. But as we said before, there is an art in long-range economic planning of social engineering. Break the body to break the mind. Break the body to break the mind. It is necessary, therefore, dear brothers and sisters, to keep your wealth and your health in your body, to maintain your strong mind, to resist the call of weakness that has become inherent due to how do you turn a god into a slave. Gentlemen, but as we said before, there is an art in long-range economic planning. You must keep your eye and thoughts on the female and the offspring of the horse and the nigger. A brief discourse, spring development, will shed light on the key to the sound economic principle. Pay little attention to the generations of original breaking, but concentrate your efforts on future generations. Therefore, if you break the female, or when you break the female, she will break the offspring in its early years of development for you. And when the offspring is old enough to work, she will deliver it up to you for her normal female protective tendencies will have been lost in the original breaking process. For example, take the case of the wild stud horse. A female horse and an already infant horse, and compare the breaking process with two captured nigger males in their natural state. A pregnant nigger woman with her infant offspring. Take the stud horse. Break him for limited containment. Completely break the female horse until she becomes very gentle, whereas you or anybody can ride her in her comfort. Breed the mare and the stud until you have the desired offspring. Then you can turn the stud to freedom until you need him again. Train the female horse whereby she will eat out of your hand, and she will in turn train the infant horse to eat out of your hand also. When it comes to breaking the uncivilized nigger, use the same process, but vary the degree and step up the pressure so as to do a complete reversal of the mind. The meanest and most necklace-ribbed nigger, strip him of his clothes in front of the remaining male niggers, the female and the nigger infant. Tar and feather him. Tie each leg to a different horse, faced in opposite directions. Set him afire and beat both horses to pull him apart in front of the remaining niggers. The next step is to take a bullwhip and beat the remaining nigger males to the point of death in front of the female and the infant. Of God, you, gentlemen, you become God in him, for he can be useful for future breeding. The breaking process of the African woman: take the female and run a series of tests on her to see if she will submit to your desires willingly. Test her in every way, because she is the most important factor for good economics. If she shows any sign of resistance in submitting completely to your will, do not hesitate to use the bullwhip on her to extract that last bit of bullshit out of her. Take care not to kill her. For doing so, you'll spoil good economics. When in complete submission, she will train her offspring in the early years to submit to labor when they become of age. Understanding is the best thing. Therefore, we shall go deeper into this area on the subject matter concerning what we have proceeded here in this breaking process, female nigger, social engineering. Dear listeners, do you not see this factor of workmanship and process on you today? And for those of you who did not use your little calculator called your brain to add 300 years, 1712 to 300 gives you what? Come on, give me a listener. Call in. I'm here. Come on, you can do it. That's all right. Don't worry about it. That's 2012. What was the state of America in 2012? We just knew the world was supposed to come to an end in 2012 according to the Aztec calendar. We thought the world was going to come to an end, or at least they like thought, because all the computer clocks were supposed to shut down going from 1999 to 2000. But the Aztec calendar gave a forecast that the known world would end in 2012. Did it? I'm going to answer that question for you. The known world did end in 2012 because the effects of the Willie Lynch letter ends in 2012. The American Caucasian went to war with their brother, the English Caucasian, the blue coat against the red coat, the father against the son, the brother against the brother. Can Satan cast out Satan? Who was president in 2012? And look at the state of America at that time. Have the social dynamics of the environment due to social engineering changed since 2012? There was an 8-year period of reprieve between 2012 to 2020. What has happened in that reprieve of 8 years of mercy? Social unrest is on the rise in the black community. Not since the days of the Black Panther Party has there been a social outburst in the streets. But what took place that gave the Black Panther Party its drive? It was the words that came from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that James Brown wrote the song, Say It Loud. Black and I'm proud. Well, now it's back again. Only now it says Black Lives Matter. And social unrest is not just limited to the Americas. Social unrest, due to social engineering, has now encompassed the globe. Where they're now saying Black Lives Matter around the globe, around the earth. It is everywhere. Black Lives Matter signs are popping up in the Polynesian Islands. People you would not have thought identified with their blackness because they know they came there to those islands historically from another place according to their oral tradition. They didn't start in Polynesia. They traveled there from the southern shores of Africa. They know their history. Ask The Rock whether he's a white man or a black man, and he will be happy to tell you in private. Black Lives Matter signs are in the surrounding areas in Moscow, Russia. Why? Because the indigenous populations of that area have now come out of the woodwork and they're as dark as I am. The black man of Europe has now popped up with Black Lives Matter signs in Ireland. Did you know that the story of the leprechaun and Captain Ring the leprechaun? For his gold is the story of a very small statured black man. Do your homework, black man and woman. There is no place on the planet where we have not been, where the elder culture of that land, there's a story about us hidden in the language of the newcomer that occupies it now. Social engineering. How do you turn a god into a slave? And what has Dr. Trump set on the table for social engineering to identify a stolen lecture, a stolen election? For the presidency of the United Snakes of America. And this is Not So Mad Science. And I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. There is 15 minutes of clock time left. But I have almost exhausted my material in deliverance to you tonight. So to that end, I will not bore you with more words from me. I'm going to share with you words and language from someone far smarter than I am. And I've played it before, so I'm going to play it again. Consciousness of the time. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan warned America.
I want you to see what America is spending for military and what she's spending for education. $650 billion spent on more weapons. And even though President Obama has said no to nuclear weapons and wants to bring the stockpile of nuclear weapons in the world down, yet he asked for $5 billion for more nuclear armament. Do you think they're preparing for peace? Put up on this board the American installations around Russia, around China, and in the Middle East, in Iraq, where oil reserves equal $30 trillion. America is not there because Saddam Hussein was a dictator. America has supported dictators in Central America, South America, Africa, and all other parts of the world. America doesn't give a damn about who is a dictator as long as they bow down to the will of the foreign policy objectives of the United States of America. Look at this map. Do you have my little laser pointer? You forgot it. I don't need the mic. I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes,
America has over 730 military installations and bases in over 50 countries. It also has military personnel on active duty in dozens of other countries. What does America need to have bases all over the world if America is a peacemaker? Talk to me. Then you ain't got a preacher. Cowardly people who claim to know God but punk out when it comes to freeing the people by telling the naked truth. All these places marked in red is where she has bases. Canada, Greenland. See here, this is Colombia, Quito, in the capital of Peru. All of these countries, he has bases. We just put a base in Colombia because it's right next door to Venezuela, and they want to be able to attack Venezuela. But look here, you missed it because this is an old map, but right here, Haiti, there's a base now in Haiti. They have discovered oil in Haiti that's more than the oil in Venezuela. So 20,000 U.S. troops are now in Haiti, and they're not there to rebuild Haiti. Open your eyes, black man and woman. You will never be able to say if Farrakhan didn't tell you the truth. I'm wiping your blood from my hands today. And if I never speak to you again, I've said what needs to be said. Now look here. This is Arabia. They got bases in the Emirates. This is Yemen. They just got a base there. This is Oman, Turkey. Of course, this is Europe. See? Now, this is Eastern Europe. This used to belong to the Soviet Union. Now, America is placing strategic missiles in Poland, I think in the Czech Republic, aimed here. Anything that jumps off in the Middle East, America has bases in Iraq to attack Iran. She has bases in Arabia, in Qatar, in Oman, in Yemen to attack. Now she's down here. Somalia, Eritrea, and Djibouti. She just put a base in Djibouti so that anything that happens in this area, which is becoming more Islamic, Muslims are ready to come back to their religion and live it. Now, America, under Barack Obama, is bombing in Pakistan. All up in this region. And you go up into the Caucasus Mountains. This is where lots of oil is here. That's why Afghanistan was so important to America. They wanted to bring a pipeline from north of Afghanistan through Afghanistan out to the Arabian Sea. Now, here is Afghanistan, here's Pakistan, but above Afghanistan, in Turkmenistan, in Kyrgyzstan, all of these places, there's oil and gas. America ain't thinking about tyranny, oppression, misuse of women. Those of you who were here last week, you saw the pictures. I don't want to show them again. Unless you think this is a pornography class, but here's Iran, here's Iraq. They got all these bases here. Now they want to attack Iran. Let me say to America, General Petraeus has said, we have the plans to bomb Iran. They also have set up plans in case they have to go to war with China or Russia. Now, it's all in your Bible. If you know how to read, wake up the mighty men of war. This is now Joel. Wake them up. What are you going to do, Prophet Joel? Tell them to turn their plowshares and their pruning hooks into weapons of war, because the time of war has come. So the nations are not interested in cultivating the people or cultivating the earth. They're buying weapons. For what? War. The great war has begun. It says in the scriptures, when Jerusalem is surrounded by armies, the end has come now. Forsake your houses and run. There in Dimona, where the enemy has nuclear power that he produced in Dimona. That's where the African Hebrew Israelites are, and they're the best thing that ever happened to that place called Israel. But I'm going to say this. You know, that's the Holy Land. You can't bring your mess into the Holy Land and think that God will not expel you from that place. Can you imagine in Israel? They have gay parades in the Holy Land. Now you think about that. Do you think the God of heaven is pleased with that? That's why a new Jerusalem is to come down from heaven. Put up the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh fleets. It's wartime. That's why I decided to wear red today. Just letting you know, no easy time coming. You're going to have to prepare to save your lives. Now here's the second fleet guarding the eastern coast. The third fleet guarding the western coast. The fifth fleet there, I think this is the Indian Ocean. And this fleet is designed to protect here. The sixth fleet is positioned in Europe, but it can move into any area here that's in trouble. And the seventh fleet is in the Pacific for China and Japan. These are nuclear ships. I heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say that Allah was going to destroy the sixth and the seventh fleet. I didn't ask him how. I just know what he said. War is here now. And if they attack Iran, I'm saying this to our government, you're being blinded by your passion and the fear in Israel that if Iran develops nuclear weapons, then what? Iran would be absolutely crazy if she had a weapon to attack Israel. Israel is the most well-armed nation in all that area of the world. Israel has more weapons of mass destruction that could defeat that whole area. So she's feeling, you know, her oats, I guess you could say. So they're saying, well, look, if you don't want to do it, step aside and let us do it. Let you do it, and then what? You know if you do it, you're going to pull America in behind you. But let me tell you what you're facing. You can't win another war. You can't win in Iraq. You can't win in Afghanistan. You can't win in Pakistan. I don't care where you go. Your day of winning for evil is over. And do you know why America is there? She's after strategic interests. Have you heard that word before? Strategic interests? That's oil. That's gas. That's precious minerals.
And this is Not So Mad Science, here on the Black Hole Radio Network with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, once again and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. I trust and pray and I thank the Savior that I have said nothing and done nothing to cause you harm or dis-ease, but gave you information and some enlightenment with the glowing light of something to look forward to till tomorrow. To that end, I'll leave you with this, those immortal words of that great black preacher from the Adam Clayton Powell Jr. of the Abyssinian Baptist Church in New York. Don't give up hope. Don't feel despair. Look for the light within. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. And may God bless you and me that I can be with you once again next Tuesday. Peace out, y'all.